This is Emily Wright of EG, and today I speak to the architect Daniel Liebeskind, who is currently on his way to MIPIM for a collaboration with the City of Belfast. Liebeskind, of course, architect famed for projects including the Jewish Museum and the regeneration of Ground Zero in New York following the 9/11 attacks. I spoke to him about Belfast, of course, and also about brands, city brands, and rebuilding after disaster and tragedy. So let's start off with Belfast. So there's a collaboration at MIPIM, which is very exciting. So could you just tell me a bit about that?
Well, you know, MIPIM is this large event that brings really cities together, and Belfast will be represented as it should be in a new way, and I'll be happy to be speaking also on behalf of Belfast, because I'm someone who has been to Belfast many, many times. As you perhaps know, I worked on that reconciliation center at the Mays prison, which unfortunately did not go forward, but I got to know what a fantastic city Belfast is, and therefore I will be speaking at the Belfast Pavilion, yes.
And what are your thoughts on Belfast as a hub and as a city compared to, I mean, you've worked in cities all across the world. You're better placed than probably most people to have a comparative view of cities compared to others. And what are your thoughts on Belfast?
Well, I think Belfast is a fantastic place in the world, not just in Europe, to be a hub, because there's a very educated workforce. It's a city that has imagination, a city that is really sort of under the radar, but should be, you know, really in the center of that radar. So there is no doubt in my mind that Belfast will succeed in a tremendous way in the coming years.
Excellent. And let's talk about global cities generally. We've done a lot here at EG about brand and the importance of cities having a brand these days and what kind of occupiers brands can bring to those cities. And I wanted to talk to you, particularly off the back of all the amazing work that you've done at Ground Zero, around restoring a brand and how regenerating for good can turn an area around.
Yes, well, I think that's a good example of an area that when I first started working on it, you know, people had lost all hope. You know, most of the companies had moved out of Lower Manhattan by the time I arrived soon after those attacks. And most people thought that this area would never come back to life, that it would be just over. Office spaces were generally being given for free to people. People had moved out of the area and thought that's the end. But I think by following a plan, a master plan that concentrates on public space, on public amenities, on transportation, on culture, and of course also on the commercial activities that are so central to New York, and to the memory of what happened on that site, not just as a side, you know, a footnote, but a central sense of bridging between memory and the future, has made Ground Zero site really the number one place in New York. It's now really the new center of New York. There's no doubt for the next, you know, generation, 30 years, this is where all the developments are: culture, industry, retail, hotels, schools, massive population growth. 250,000 people or more have moved to Ground Zero since I started working on the project. So it just shows that even a site which was so tragic and so kind of sad could become a fulcrum for the development of a city. And I have to say that another project is, just to bring another project in Milan, City Life, City Life project, which I did the master plan, and I worked with both Zaha Hadid and Naratori Suzaki, was a huge site in the center of the city where the fairgrounds used to be. They moved out, and what I did in the master plan and what we did as architects was not to just restore the grid which was there, but really create a 21st century, you know, green space with transportation, with housing, with offices, with retail, with culture. So yes, it can be done, and cities, as I often say, are in competitions with each other. It's not just countries, not really countries. It's really cities that have to compete. And I think Belfast is really one of those cities in the race, as I can see it.
And you talk then about, when you're talking about New York, about, you know, this place being somewhere that people want to be, the new heart of New York, despite the sadness. And I've been to Ground Zero, actually. I went in November, back in November. And Do you think there's an element? I mean, what's been done there and what you've done there is really quite sensational. And I think it seems to me that that part of that is by really embracing the sadness and tackling it head on. And the pools are the center of focus. And,
yes.
And rather than running away from it, turning absolutely. It into the heart.
Absolutely. You cannot hide the traumas or the troubles. You cannot hide, you know, memories. That's not something that will ever work. You have to really face them and turn them from something negative to something positive. And I think that's really the bigger cultural change. It's not just building buildings, museums, hubs, but really transforming the entire identity of the city to something that it always was, which was a creative city. So yes, I think that's a good example of it.
And you once said, I think, and apologies if you didn't say this, but I have you it's once saying, misogyny is built into society. And I just wondered how you felt, or if you felt, that actually spills over into the built environment, and how we can make sure that the world and the buildings and the infrastructure is built for everybody. Is that something that you've noticed?
Oh, yes.
I wonder whether that spills over into the physical, and whether we need to try harder to build for everybody.
Well, that's a key. You know, I'm a great believer in democracy as the only ground in which you can build really interesting places for people. And I believe in the process, democratic process, as fraught as it sometimes is, as it was in New York. But I'm a great believer that, you know, access has to be given to everyone, that we must, you know, not fall into those pitfalls of catering to, you know, this group or that group, but embrace really the differences. And I think that idea of differences, and that also translates into the space, creates really a place for everybody. And that's a key, I think, to developing a successful hub or successful city center.
How do we do that? How do you do that? What's your strategy? Because it's quite hard to do.
It is hard to do. Well, it's not just, there's no formula for it. It's a poetic, you know, architecture and city planning are poetic disciplines. That might sound a little far-fetched, but it's not just about infrastructure and technology and engineering. It's about understanding the deeper traditions, which are cultural and which are humanistic. And I think once you touch upon those humanistic roots of a city, which combines the arts, you know, geometries, mathematics, the stars, dance, you know, tragedy, poetry, then you can really, really speak about the human soul and not just, you know, the human body. And I think that is the key to a great urban development. It's the spirit of the place that has to be there. And that, of course, then drives the buildings and everything else. But I would never start with the buildings or with the, you know, with the concrete. But just the other way around, the Julius Locker of a place.
I'm conscious of your time, but I've got a few more questions. In 2015, you said that architecture is a field of repression. And that's really, really interesting. And you mentioned that there has to be this willingness to move away from comfortable design and comfort. Could you explain that in a bit more depth? Because that's such an interesting way to look at things.
Well, you know, I recently published a book on the creative process, which I called The Edge of Order. And I started with an epigram of Paul Valéry, the great French poet and philosopher, who says that civilization is threatened by order and disorder at all times. And of course, those are the easy sort of extremes. Let's do this, let's order this, or this is just disorder. It's the navigation between these poles that I think creates a human city. And I think that's really the task of planning and of architecture. It's not just to fall into some formulaic idea of what has been done that has been successful, but to really be innovative and really break new ground, because time is changing and people's desires are changing. And that's why I think architecture has to sort of lead the development and not just lag behind it.
And do you think there's enough acceptance among architects and designers and master planners and people who are at the forefront of delivering these new spaces and places to actually do that?
No, well, I think we are going through a evolution. I think, as you indicated in my quote, architecture, it has been a kind of field of let's call it quasi-authoritarian. You know, architects kind of are in some ivory tower sitting beyond, and suddenly buildings appear on the streets and places appear, and you know, no one's been really aware of it, and it appears like a fait accompli. So that's not the kind of architecture I like. I don't like the sort of authoritarian streak in architecture. I like architecture that is really varied, that isn't just a glib, you know, a frontage, but really responds to needs which go really beyond just the material needs that people have. It goes to the needs of the psyche, of the human soul. And of course, great spaces that we love in tradition have been created like that. They haven't been just done as exercises of power. So again, it's about public involvement. It's about the fact that architecture is political. It's a politeia. It's for the citizens. It's by the citizens. So it should be something really open-minded and caring, sort of imagination with it, as far as it can lead.
And you mentioned politics there. I'm just interested. Obviously, I'm phoning in from the UK, and so you know, first and foremost, a UK brand here. What are your thoughts on the UK market at the moment in terms of the opportunities for architects and designers here in London and the rest of the UK? Obviously, we're in a bit of a political tight spot at the moment here in the UK.
Yeah. Of course. Well, look, I don't think speculation is a good way to develop a city. In any case, I think there has to be an idea beyond just quick profits. And that idea has to include affordable housing. You know, I just won a competition in a poor neighborhood in New York for social housing for the elderly. Because it's not only the glorious buildings for people who can afford them, but we need to really have a social justice in the city, an ethical approach to everyone being able to share the city, and that's what the core of the city is. If a city is not equitable, it's going to fail and it's going to, you know, backfire. And we see that in many, many places. So yes, I think social justice, equitable distribution, affordable housing, that's all part of what I believe a good project must contain today to be sustainable.
Okay, thank you. And finally, I'm throwing a lot of quotes about that you've said over the years too. I'm sorry, but you said that you once said that you don't read things that the critics have said about you. And your quote was, "I have more important things to read." Now, I'm desperate to know what are those more important things? What do you spend your time reading, which means that what the critics say is not really on the agenda?
Well, I don't only read. I memorize the poetry of Emily Dickinson. I memorize Shakespeare's sonnets and soliloquies. I read books that are sometimes, 2,000 or 3,000 years old. Yes, one has to have a good perspective on the longevity of culture and not get too distracted by, fashions that pass by.